This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal.
You know what I love most about the holidays? Giving gifts. But not just any gifts. Real gifts. Thoughtful gifts. Oh my God, how did you know gifts? That's why I love gift shopping with The RealReal. The RealReal is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. And it's a holiday shopping secret I'm going to let you in on. Whether it's a surprisingly affordable, pristine condition bag for your BFF, a vintage find that's cool enough for the Gen Zer in your life, or even something your impossible to shop for dad will love. Get used to saying, I found it on The RealReal. Seriously, with over 10,000 new arrivals dropping every day from brands like Gucci, Fendi, Prada, Louis Vuitton, Tiffany & Co., and Cartier, there's guaranteed to be something for everyone on your list. Oh, and did I mention everything's up to 90% off retail?
Get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. TheRealReal.com.
Welcome back, all. Thank you, as ever, everyone, for continuing to get in touch and sharing your thoughts and opinions. Best place to do so, comment section below. And if you have a longer story, maybe with some pictures, you can email hi@tuesdaydobbs.com. All thanks to you that I can make these episodes on a weekly basis. You give me unlimited content to make, so much so that the hardest thing for me to do on a weekly basis is desperately try and figure out what I should talk about, because you give me so many options. I'm going to start off with something, the purest good vibes, the thing that makes motorcycling so magic. Zen. As simple as that. I want to play the whole video here, but I can't because of YouTube copyright stuff. So I'll try and just do a couple of clips here and there while I read this out. This is from Benny in Berlin. This is just glorious. Go and check out his channel. If ever there was a video to make you want to get into biking, this is it. Take a listen. Freddie, we've been in touch a couple of times over the last few years, and today I just wanted to write because, as a BMW R80 GS rider, it genuinely hurts to hear about the struggles with repairing newer BMW models. I'm not a skilled mechanic myself, but hearing that riders can't fix their bikes that are half as old as mine makes me question the direction that we're heading with technology in general. My old R80 GS came with a proper repair manual back in the 1980s. Back then, it was normal, even expected, that owners could understand and repair the mechanics of their machines, no matter where they were. That's the key here. I have a deep love for the bikes of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, because they were truly built to last. Of course, these bikes also break down. Just last week, I got stranded on the highway on my way to the workshop. What was meant to be a simple carburetor check turned into leaving the bike there for an uncertain amount of time. Look, it sucks, but at least I know everything on this bike can be fixed, thanks to third-party parts suppliers and small manufacturers who still care about these machines. Keeping them alive is possible. Don't get me wrong, I'm not rejecting the achievements of the digital age. I benefit from them every single day. I just keep asking myself, when did we take the wrong turn? And is there a way to go back and correct that path? As a true fan of the analog world, and inspired by a few talented YouTube creators and filmmakers, I started my own channel here on YouTube and on Instagram as well. It's called Analog Rides. I'd be honored if you'd take a look at the last episode, My Forever Bike. Benny, that video, I dread to think how long that took you, because that is cinema level art. It's, I watched it 3 times over. It's fantastic. It's got so many views and I'm delighted. You deserve every single one of them. That is as good as it gets video-wise, Benny. Everyone go and check that out. And say that you came from Tuesday at Dobbs if you go and check it out. It's fantastic. From the most beautiful magic of motorcycling. So Monica has decorated this in Halloween's. And I've just noticed she's put the most gigantic spider in the window there. And I had a sudden freak out thinking it was actually a spider, but it's just a stuck on one. I digress and I continue. Indian Motorcycle, the end of the road. This has been everywhere. Polaris, the owners of Indian Motorcycle, have just sold Indian Motorcycle, hold your breath here, to a private equity company. On the face of it, this is the worst possible thing. Private equity companies have the most atrocious reputation for what they do to the companies they buy. And bear in mind, I'm generalizing here massively. People always say when I say anything, Freddie, get ready to be sued. Look, all I'm saying is private equity companies, they have an appalling reputation. They will suck all of the possible money out of that they can out of a company to please the investors. They don't care about the company. They care about a quick turnaround to get as much money out of the company as possible. And then they dump it. Or they desperately try and sell it for a profit. But the, what do we call it? The structure, what's that building term that you say? The foundations of the company, they are just not good. It's all about quick money, quick turnaround. Take a listen to this though. I'll try and be as level-headed as possible because I should not be giving any kind of financial advice or even possibly insight. This is from Gerald over in the US. Freddie, I've woken up to the news here in the US that Indian have been sold to a private equity group, Calwood, based out of Los Angeles. How does selling Indian to a group that buys and sells property benefit the Indian motorcycle brand? Nobody knows their true intentions at this stage, but private equity groups are all about profit, full stop. Does that mean slimming down the range, using cheaper materials in the construction, closing some of the dealer networks, etc.? Indian amounted to just 7% of the Polaris overall sales. You don't sell a profitable asset, so I'm assuming it wasn't making them enough money to hold on to. It's a sad day for people who love the Indian story. It appears Polaris has repeated what it did to the Victory brand. For anyone not familiar, Victory's a brand I think that Polaris bought at the same time as Indian, I believe, or something like that. But in essence, Victory was like a more modern version of Indian, but it had a really good reputation. A lot of people that have those old Victory bikes that Polaris canned, they rave about them. Rock solid reliability, incredibly well built, and a genuine shame that the Victory brand was ended in such a way. I carry on with Gerald. Yes, of course, at this stage, they're saying it could be a resurgence of Indian with more investment being pumped into the brand. But to what effect? My guess is they will hold on to the company, make the profitability better, and then sell to the highest bidder. Such a shame. I'd really hope that Polaris would continue with Indian for years to come. After all, they purchased Indian back in 2011, and the bikes have received critical acclaim since that time. Gerald, a view that a huge amount of people share, and being completely honest, that's a view that I share as well. When I saw a private equity company was taking over, I thought, well, that's it. It's the beginning of the end. For Polaris to sell it to a private equity company means, or at least meant to me initially, Polaris is so desperate to get rid of this dead wood, this dead weight. Polaris is a business. If Indian's not making them business, they're going to want to dump it as quickly as possible. And it sounds like, on the face of it, that's what they did. I was at a garage last week and we were discussing Indian. Initially, it was two of us discussing Indian. And then a couple of the mechanics heard we were discussing Indian. They came over and the initial reaction was, oh, are you talking about Indian? And we said, yeah, what do you think? And he said, oh, it's over. That is what a lot of people think. That's it, game over. The American bike brands are suffering horrifically at the moment. Harley Davidson is going through some of the worst times it's ever been through. Maybe, I don't know if that's pushing it, but they are going through seriously bad times at the moment. Atrocious, atrocious figures currently. And Indian, now that they're being sold to a private equity firm, oh, I don't know if that's looking good. But let me give you the most balanced discussion I can. This comes from Keith, and this is interesting in itself. Keith, thank you for this. Take a listen. Just a quick heads up on the Polaris Indian sale, as I know thousands of other YouTubers will be posting the news that the end of Indian Motorcycle. If you haven't already done an in-depth inquiry about the transaction, here's an update. Here we go. The new CEO is a motorcycle enthusiast called Mike Kennedy. Remember this because I'll show you his LinkedIn profile. So, biking enthusiast called Mike Kennedy with 30 years experience in the motorcycle business. This means that Indian Motorcycle is not, Block Capital's not from Keith, about to evaporate, but to get the overdue experienced push into motorcycle sales and customer service reality. If you haven't noticed already, most of the YouTube posts about this transaction are negative hype. It would be nice to hear someone with a little more common sense, well, Keith, no one has ever said that about me, but thank you, actually explain the positive truth about this. Keith, thank you for this. Let me go into this now as the level-headed, common-sense gentleman that I am. This is from roadracingworld.com. The company, Indian, has entered into, or Polaris, I should say, has entered into a definitive agreement to sell a majority stake in Indian Motorcycle to Carol Waddell P., an independent private equity firm founded in 2014 and headquartered in Los Angeles, California. Carol Wood has selected Mike Kennedy. This is where it gets interesting. To serve as the CEO of the new independent Indian Motorcycle organization once the deal closes. At more than 30 years of motorcycle industry experience, Kennedy has a proven track record as a leader in and around the motorcycle industry. He previously served with the CEO of RumbleOn, the nation's largest power sports dealership group. He was the CEO and vice president of Vance & Hines, that world famous motorcycle exhaust company that do a lot of exhaust for Harley Davidson, I should say. And he also spent 26 years at Harley Davidson in various leadership roles. Wow. Okay, this is really interesting. So all the negative about private equity firms aside now, this private equity firm, the first thing that they've done is appoint an incredibly experienced gentleman to be CEO. We were talking a few weeks ago about Harley Davidson's new CEO, and I looked at his career history and I thought, well, this is not the guy that's going to be changing Harley Davidson. This is not a guy, when I hear his intro to Harley Davidson speech, I hear people talking about him, and I think, my Lord, this is the guy to turn American motorcycling around. No, the Harley Davidson new CEO has no interest in motorcycles at all, whether it be the culture of motorcycles or actually getting out on a motorbike. And I feel for a role like this, I know some people disagree, passion is so important. Well, Indian Motorcycle have done it. They've got someone with a superb career history here. So what would you rather? A private equity firm coming in and appointing the perfect CEO, or Harley Davidson kind of doing it themselves, but appointing someone with no motorbiking experience? Things do start to look a little bit more positive. Let's take a look here. Okay, so LinkedIn. Mike Kennedy. This is fascinating. I've got his LinkedIn profile up. And this is up from just 1 week ago. And this is Mike's current post. He's written this. Really big and exciting news announced today from Polaris as they announced their decision to separate from Indian Motorcycle into a standalone company. I'm grateful and humbled by Carol Wood LP having the confidence in me for leading Indian Motorcycle Company into the future. I like his wording. In fact, I like him in general. He looks really good. And just scrolling through his experience, you would have to say that his experience is just about as good as it gets for this. I don't think I can imagine or dream up a better person for the job. The question is, who's going to really call the shots here? Is the private equity firm going to strangle Mike so much with the limitations about being a ruthless business, which it has to do, it is a business, it's got to make money, and clearly it wasn't before. So in that regard, you'd have to say Polaris have failed. Polaris have succeeded in making good motorbikes with the likes of the Scout, but they failed in making it a profitable enough company to hold on to. So how is the balance of power going to lie here between the private equity firm and the vastly experienced Mike Kennedy? I hope it works out. I like the look of this guy. Are we looking at a rosy future? Certainly it's going to be in good hands with Mike. I'll watch with interest. Moving on. Okay, I'll do one more bit of bad news here. Nothing is safe from any government's grasp. Doesn't matter what country you're in, what political party you support. In essence, It's all exactly the same. This is from Biwoo. Any news on the VED, that's vehicle excise duty, for the classic bikes? That is going to please a lot of people. So, in essence, in the UK, any motorbike or any vehicle, car included, that is over 40 years old immediately doesn't have to have its annual MOT, that's its annual safety check, and also, and this is really important, it doesn't have to pay any road tax, that's any annual road tax charge, completely exempt any vehicle over 40 years. And I'll give you two examples here. If I remember correctly, my Bonneville is £120 a year road tax to ride it on the atrocious roads that we have in the UK just to have that privilege. The Fiat is £30 a year road tax because it's small and environmentally friendly. And the Jeep. The Jeep is £720 a year for road tax. That gives you an idea about some of the potential savings. So bear that in mind when I read this from This Is Money. Rachel Reeves, who's our Chancellor, is reportedly considering closing a decade, and this is from This Is Money, by the way, closing a decade-old loophole that provides exemption for road tax for classic cars in what could be yet another tax grab on drivers. Shadow Transport Secretary Richard Holden says he's concerned that the Chancellor could scrap the vehicle excise duty immunity for 40-year-old motors in next month's budget. With Reeves seeking to raise taxes to plug the fiscal hole in Treasury incomings, the removal of the 40-year-old historic vehicle exemption rule, which was introduced under Conservative Party, would see 30 or 340,000 older vehicle owners facing annual road tax bills once again. I really hate it. I hate it when there's any of this retrospective stuff. A government comes in, for example, I always rant about this, so I'll make this quick. Governments tell everyone 15 years ago, buy a diesel car. We're going to make it as financially appealing for you as possible because diesel is the future. It's environmentally friendly. It's great for your purse. We're going to help you out in any way we can to get a diesel vehicle. And then 12 years later, they say to everyone, diesel's the killer of the earth. And now they're telling everyone to go out and buy electric vehicles, and that's fine. And they're giving gigantic tax incentives. That's why there are the number of EVs there are. Same in the UK, same in Norway. If you take away the tax incentives for EVs, they wouldn't be selling half of what they're selling at the moment, maybe even less than that. And the point I'm making with this, you just can't really trust any government around the world when you're making a vehicle purchasing decision. For example, I've been looking at 40-year-old vehicles thinking, this is great, I will save in road tax, but they can so easily change it with the click of their finger, so easily. And of course, this is going to happen with electric vehicles. If you have an electric car or motorbike and you're currently having tax incentives and you're currently paying less road tax a year to drive and you're thinking, this is amazing, and also it's cheaper to charge up your electric vehicle, no way. No way is that going to last for much longer, because as soon as the balance tips and enough people have adopted electric vehicles, whether it's cars or motorbikes, the government are then going to tax those vehicles exactly the same as internal combustion engines once it suits them to do so, because there's no way they're signing off and losing so much revenue in this road tax. On top of that, at the moment, you just happily plug in your vehicle and you charge it up overnight and you pay pennies, but the government will figure out a way to charge you full VAT on that soon. Just a matter of time. That's it. Rant over. Now, on to Honda. They're on an unstoppable roll at the moment. This is from Agassi. Freddie, aside from the new Honda CB1000F, Honda are releasing a CB500 Super 4. It's the same sort of 90s design, but smaller and looks way better. Agassi, let's take a look at this. God, it looks absolutely phenomenal as well. Everything Honda touch at the moment turns to gold. Visor down, say this. The new Honda CB500 Super 4 takes the aesthetic inspiration from the much-loved CB900F of the 70s and 80s. So I think this was shown at the China Motor Show. 500cc, four-cylinder, 50 horsepower. And with looks like that, with that perfect balance, lovely engine size, four-cylinder, 50 horsepower, well, that will be a hit. I have no doubt at all. That will go along with the 1000, and both of them are going to be huge hits. Honda can do no wrong at all. Now, bike of the week. Hunting for an old tiger. This is from Steve. Steve, who I had the pleasure of meeting at Bolt about a week and a half ago. Bolt, the very cool clothing store with a motorbiking influence. Freddie, here are a couple of photos of my 2008 Triumph Tiger 1050. My much-loved all-weather mile muncher currently with 94,478 miles. And the engine hasn't been apart. It's been so very reliable, and although sporting a somewhat weathered appearance nowadays, Steve, that's the perfect kind of bike. It shows it's been loved and enjoyed. I keep up with mechanical maintenance. I like the way you emphasised mechanical maintenance there, Steve. Myself, including what some might call obsessive oil changes. This, Steve, is fascinating. Okay, get ready for this. It's a Tiger that's never had its engine apart. It's got 95,000 miles, which is, apologies if this is way off, 175,000 kilometres, something like that. How often do you think Steve changes the oil? And you can't argue with him, because this bike's done a lot of miles, so it clearly works. 1,500 to 1,800 miles. That's how often Steve does it. Right, Steve, let's have a look. You've clearly done a lot of adventures on this. First off, I know these Tigers because I had, for 4 years, Triumph Speed Triple with the exact same engine as this, 1050. And I think I did about 30,000 miles with my Speed Triple, and it was rock solid. The only thing I ever had to do to the engine was replace a rusted spark plug. That's it, so I can vouch for this. Beautiful sound if you have an air exhaust on, even without that Triumph air exhaust. They sound amazing. They pull so, so brilliantly well. I really, really like these engines. So the Triumph Tiger 1050, launched in 2006. All the way through to 2012, 1050 triple engine. While my Speed Triple had 130 horsepower, this is slightly detuned, 115 horsepower, 198 kilos dry weight, so perfectly respectable that, in fact, pushing over towards being downright good. MCN owner's rating, this is where things get really interesting. The owner's rating on MCN, and it's had a perfectly good amount of owner's reviews as well, not just one or two, 4.6 out of 5. In fact, I took a look at all of these owners' ratings. I was scrolling through them. Almost every single rating, whether it's for build quality, reliability, performance, the overall package in general, almost everything is 5 out of 5 for every single owner. I think there's only one review I could find that had a review of 3 out of 5 here. And it said the only negative they could think of was wind buffeting too much on the gentleman's head, just above the windscreen at the front. But even that ruthless owner gave the reliability of the Tiger 4 out of 5 stars. And he said, the only thing he could say about reliability is change the spark plugs, tires and oil. That's really it. They basically don't break, these bikes. They're oxes. They carry on and on. That is an awful, awful comparison, but sorry. But anyway, I carry on. So, let's have a look. It was the last generation before ABS, to the best of my knowledge. So it really is the last fairly tech-free generation. You don't have rider modes, anything like that. I believe this has an aluminium frame like my old Speed Triple did, meaning you won't get any rust at all. And I never even had a spot of corrosion on mine. Very, very good, well-made frame. The only thing that I would recommend here, if you're looking for a Triumph of this era, this is really important. The Triumph alarms were total garbage, awful. So bad were the Triumph alarms of this era, around about 2004 to 2013 maybe. They were so appalling that they can ruin owners' experiences. So if you have a Triumph from this era and you've got a Triumph alarm, you can buy a little blanking plate or something like that that completely disconnects the alarm. Get rid of it as soon as possible. It will cause you so much hassle with the battery, with the alarm going off in the middle of the night, everything around that. Your bike will be transformed without the alarm, I promise you. So let's have a look. Inspired by Steve, you can pick these bikes up for 50,000 miles with, if you're lucky, 1,600, if you're lucky. But they do hold their value decently well. There's one specifically that I like the look of, and that is this one. Facebook Marketplace. I think with this, I would actually spend a little bit more money to get one for £3,200 here. 35,000 miles on the clock. Beautiful orange colour. And this comes with the Triumph panniers, colour coded. This is the full package, the real deal here. And this is why I would take this. Great condition, well looked after. Previous owner was a Triumph mechanic with lots of new parts fitted. They've listed the parts there. Logbook present and in my name, only selling as I can no longer store the bike. I searched, this bit wraps up, done. I searched for a while for a Tiger 1050 and this was the best by far. And it looks it, £3,200 for a bike that'll last a lifetime with more than enough power than you will ever need. Perfect bike of the week. Thank you so much everyone for watching. I really hope you enjoyed the video. Have a great week all. I'll see you in the next one.